From WFIU in Bloomington, Indiana, I'm Kate Young, and this is Earth Eats.
Food connects to, for me personally, it's something that I connect with in ways that are hard to describe at times. Perhaps because I've been away from my family, from India, and America has become my home. But when a place becomes your home, I think we still keep the things that mean a lot, you know. And I think food is one of the ways, you know, it's beautiful memories, nostalgia.
This week on the show, we're in the kitchen with Kashika Singh. She teaches Hindi and Urdu languages at Indiana University and shares another aspect of Indian culture, namely food. That's just ahead, so stay with us. Food connects people. This is a concept we've explored many times on this show. This week, we're paying a visit to a little house on the edge of the IU campus, where the IU Food Institute has been situated for the past 8 years. It's the site of monthly cooking sessions called In the Kitchen with Kashika.
My name is Kashika Singh, and I am a senior Hindi Urdu lecturer in the Higher India Studies program. I've been teaching Hindi Urdu at IU since 2013. I'm originally from India, a small town in Uttar Pradesh, Varanasi, or some people also know it as Banaras or Kashi. There's a story behind my name. So my name is Kashika, the one from Kashi. That is the city where holy river Ganges flows. My parents named me after the city Kashi as I was born there after 8 years of trying. So they thought that was the right name for their first daughter. I like my name. I feel it connects me with who I am and what the city means to me. Even from so far away, I still hold the city in my heart every day. Varanasi is a very religious and spiritual place. Every day there's some festival, something happening that is in the core of the city. So every year, thousands and thousands of people come and take a holy dip. It's a kund. Kund is more like a stepwell, and the place or the kund is called Lolark Kund. So the idea behind is that as a couple, you have to leave everything. You have to be born again. So couple will go and take a dip together in the kund, and then they leave everything there. All the bangles or, you know, sari or any clothing that they are. So they will wear a new pair of clothes and they will leave the old pair there. They also choose one fruit or vegetable. They say that if we have a child, if we are blessed with a child, we will never eat that fruit or vegetable ever. Even today, if you go, you will see so many people taking bath there, and then piles and piles of clothes and lots of fruits and vegetables, and usually not one of the most favorite fruit or vegetables. So you'll find a lot of gourds and pumpkins and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. It had been almost 8 years that my parents were trying to have children and it didn't happen. Yeah, so I was born, you know, they took a dip as a couple, and then the next year I was born, so.
On this day, Kashika is making three dishes. Rajma, a spicy bean dish, seasoned basmati rice called jeera, and a simple bread called bati. Kashika starts by introducing the ingredients around the long table in the main room. Since some of the guests are her Hindi-Urdu language students, it's another kind of teaching moment for them.
Let's say the names in Hindi. Okay, and Hindi and Urdu, they're same. Okay, so garam masala.
Garam masala.
Jeera.
Jeera.
Namak.
Namak.
Kashmiri lal mirch.
Kashmiri lal mirch.
Haldi.
haldi,
dhaniya powder, kali mirch, rajma, jeera, long, tejpatta, elaichi, tomato, pyaz, hari mirch, adrak, lehsun, chawal. So we are going to start rajma. We take turns, you know. So I think the way we learn Indian cooking is by doing. So I learned by, you know, seeing, you know, and cooking with my mother. So this is what we are going to do today. Okay, so let's come. And you can bring it. So we need to wash this again.
Oh my God. It's so bad.
You're never
invited. Next, Kashika leads the way and everyone crowds into the kitchen to observe and to help. She's starting with the rice.
So this is about 8 cups of rice. 8 cups of basmati rice. Okay, and it's always tricky. I'm often asked, how long should we soak it, you know, and I think it depends on rice, you know. Each rice has a different timeline to cook, you know. So I think for basmati, and there are different varieties of basmati, so you have to kind of cook. You want to make sure that you don't soak it for a long time, probably 20 to 30 minutes, that's all I can, but wash it and it's all ready. So the benefit of soaking it is that it cooks very fast. You can also cook it without soaking. So don't worry if you didn't soak it.
Kashika shares her knowledge of the traditional ways that Indian food is prepared, but she's aware that lifestyles and cooking practices in the U.S. demand some flexibility.
Whenever I've done these cooking classes or cooking sessions, it's not class, you know, it's class for my class, but it's open to everybody. I try to choose recipes that are easy to make with very simple ingredients. Ingredients that are in the foundation of everyday cooking in India. It could be simple as rice and cauliflower and potato, aloo gobi, or dal or rajma or egg curry, you know, things that are easy. And also the idea was that students can make that, and it also is nutritious meal.
But she also keeps things interesting with special tools and ingredients from her homeland.
Fine, crush it, but we want to crush it. And this is mudar and pestar. This is dear to me. I brought from India and my mother-in-law gave it. So, okay, let's see. And the sound reminds me, you know, the sounds, you know, are something that is very nostalgic. So this is something, this is like, you know that it's tea time. You know you're making something. Yeah. Like in every Indian household, you will find this. And then it's like in the morning, in the evening, you know. And okay. Okay, that's all.
Every semester, I have a segment about food. You know, and the culture around the food. So how my cooking sessions are, I make a list of the ingredients for the dish we are preparing with my student. We go over the cooking terminology, the context or the culture behind. And then if we can shop together, we would do that. Otherwise, I shop it. Or this past semester, I've been cooking at the IU Food Institute, and it's a wonderful space, wonderful people to work, and very supportive. So they shop for me. And then I am there on Fridays, and students would come, and then we share. You know, so everybody is there, and then we prepare. Everybody sees, you know, students can see the steps, you know, and then I'll have all the basic spices, and they are as little as 5 main spices that we can easily find: cumin, turmeric, coriander powder, salt, and red chili powder, and sometimes garam masala powder, you know, and also whole garam masala. So I try to start with these spices and give a recap in every cooking session. And these are actually all the spices that you need for everyday cooking.
And then onion, garlic, and ginger.
Yes, yes, thank you. Yeah, onion, ginger, garlic. Now, onion, ginger, garlic, so in a traditional setting and the way I have grown up in my family, so we always ate with the season. So in the summer, we avoided ginger, garlic, onion, but we ate ginger, garlic, onion in the winters. So with the season, so and according to Ayurveda, we have tamasic and sattvic food. So sattvic would be more like plain food with less or low spices or hardly any spices, and spices that help digestion, and no ginger, garlic, onion. And tamasic is food that has, they are hot in nature. So ginger, garlic, onion, garam masala. We use these spices for both vegetarian and non-vegetarian food. So in tamasic food, we also list non-vegetarian food. Yeah. So in my family, and again, food is a personal choice for everybody, so I am referring to myself. We, in our family, grew up eating seasonal fruits and vegetables. And the idea behind that is that with change of each season, you know, our body changes. Mm-hmm. And the fruits and vegetables that are in season, you know, they help better in digestion. They are more nutritious, and they are easy to digest, easy on stomach, also not expensive, you know.
Yeah, easier to get.
Yeah, and easier to get, yeah.
I'm talking with Kashika Singh, senior Hindi Urdu lecturer in the Dar India Studies program at Indiana University. We're talking about her kitchen sessions with the IU Food Institute. In case you didn't catch that last part, she was talking about Ayurvedic traditions and distinguishing between tamasic foods and sattvic foods. We have a link to more information on that topic on our website, eartheats.org. Stay tuned for more of my conversation and cooking with Kashika after a short break. Kate Young, this is Earth Eats. I'm back in the kitchen with Kashika Singh. With the seasoned rice dish, the jeera, already started, it was time to begin the rajma, a spicy dish made with kidney beans. Kashika started with some oil and ghee warming on the stovetop.
So I'm a big fan of ghee. Okay, I'm a big fan of ghee. You don't want to cook just in ghee because then it starts burning, but ghee adds a rich flavor. So now ghee also is expensive. You know, so in India we make our ghee, we boil milk and we have like a whole milk. And what we do is we boil the milk, and when it's cools down, it has a cream that, and we kind of collect that for a week, you know, maybe a 10 days, depending how much milk we get from the milkman or we buy from the store. And then we collect it in the fridge. And there's a process, you know, when you make ghee, then you kind of churn it. You have a hand churner, or we have a mathani. It's a wooden churner. I mean, it's a traditional, you can find that in stores. And then we heat it on a low flame, you know. And then, and it's a process. I mean, your whole house smells like ghee. But we have some very nice ghee options here, so. You can make it from butter also. Okay. I like ghee in everything. Like, I have to have a ghee. Like, it's like my soul food. most fun part of Indian cooking is that basically for everyday cooking, we have the same foundation of the spices. So what are they? Cumin,
turmeric,
salt,
coriander
powder, and red chili powder.
Yeah.
And garam masala if you want that flavor that kind of gives a little kick. We want to make sure that the oil is hot enough, so it has a certain crackling sound. Okay. Yeah. So if you don't have cumin, you can check with onion, and that's how you know that it's good temperature. See that sound? Particular cooking sound that is only particular when you when this oil is hot and you're cooking, and to me this is very nostalgic.
While the rice was cooking and the rajma spices were sizzling, Kashika also had bati baking in the oven. Bati is a simple unleavened bread in the shape of a ball, something between the size of a golf ball and a tennis ball. The dough is made from whole wheat flour, semolina flour, and gram flour mixed with water and salt. It's a very stiff dough, and the bread bakes directly on the oven rack. Kashika opened the oven door for everyone to take a peek.
You know, I'm also making bati today, so you can come and see. It's kind of done. So it's not done, but it's almost 50% done. And so it has to see. And yeah, so when it is kind of changing the color and it breaks, we know that it's kind of done. And we flip it, you know, we make sure. So you have to multitask in the kitchen. Yeah. So today what I did, I wanted to show you all that what are the ingredients. We have done this in past as all together. So ginger, onion, and garlic. And what's the ratio? So we start with more onion, then garlic, and then ginger. You don't want to have a lot of garlic and ginger because then it makes bitter. I like garlic in everything, so I'm going to, this is about like what, 2 spoons of garlic. So the base has to be cooked. So the secret for any curry or any sabzi is that you want to make this, you want to start this, you know, as, you know, in like right order. And I'm often asked what's the ratio, what's the measurement, and in Indian cooking we have no measurement. So that means you have to cook it so many times that you come to your perfect taste, you know. And now I'm going to add the ginger. So at home, I'm cooking maybe 2 to 3 times Indian food, you know, and like for my children, I would cook at least 3 times. But to make the prep time, so in Indian cooking, what does take more time?
Sure.
Prepping, yeah. So I prepare this, you know, so for enough for a week, you know, and in the fridge. You don't want to keep it longer than a week, you know, and so because when the vegetable is chopped, it kind of gets bad faster. You know? So I don't, if I know I'm going to cook it, then I'll have it. You know? So we will have enough for 3 or 4 times, and let's use it. This is the time when I'm going to add the turmeric. So why do we add turmeric first? Yeah, if it needs to cook, otherwise it has that taste, aftertaste, you know. And so we put it, and then in my home, my mom, you know, always put the added the turmeric and salt before, you know, with before other spices, so it would cook faster. Also, there is this belief that we don't cook the vegetable, any dal or any curry, without turmeric. So the reason behind that is when there is a death in a Hindu family, I'm talking about the practice that is in Hindu family, okay. When there's a death in a family, as a part of the mourning period, so that usually is 12 to 13 days. We do not cook. So after the 12 days, the 13th day, we will put the kadhai. This is called kadhai. And so traditionally when, and still this is a practice, when there's a death in the family, people are not cooking. They're taking time to mourn. And so family and friends and relatives take turns to bring meal. But let's say they are cooking, if they have to cook, you are not supposed to put haldi, turmeric. Okay. So haldi has a lot of significance in Indian tradition, Indian culture. It purifies, it's also used in beautification. You know, when we get married, we have a haldi ceremony where the bride is bride and the groom, like 2 days before or a day before, they have this haldi ceremony where all the family members are, you know, putting, you know, applying haldi, ukchan. And it's a part of getting ready for the wedding. It's a part of all the festivities. But it's also a mark where, okay, now you have haldi. After this ceremony, you are not supposed to leave the house until you get married. Okay? So it's kind of like, okay, so that is why nowadays people have started doing the ceremony a day before, because, you know, the bride and the groom, they are traveling, they are going out. So as we are becoming more modern and modern, as we are getting limited with the time, you know, our rituals, our traditions, our practices are becoming like this, okay? How fast we can do it.
Next, she added the coriander powder and then the red pepper.
And I'm going to add a little bit of Kashmiri mirch. And Kashmiri mirch is not very hot, but it gives you a beautiful color. And I am always adding, and I suggest when you're using tomato in any dish, add the pepper, red pepper, with tomato, so it doesn't burn. It cooks very nicely, and also the color comes very beautiful. So, or convenient. Okay, so look, this is kind of done now. See? And now I'm going to add
My mom's like, until your heart feels happy, my heart doesn't feel happy.
So obviously we need a lot of, little bit of the garam masala also here. Just a little bit, and I will add more later. So, 2 more minutes. We can add this, and you can use the canned kidney beans, or you can just buy and then soak it. And when you soak it, make sure you add a little bit of salt in it. Okay, so this is going to have a lot of water, but we just want to cook. And we are making rajma today. We can follow the same steps that we followed, and then add garbanzo bean, any lentil you want. Oh.
नहीं नहीं इसको बस पलटना है
With the beans added, it was all transferred to a larger pot, lots of water added, and then it was brought to a boil and cooked at high heat until the beans were fully cooked and infused with the aromatics and the spices.
So I need to take that chapati now because so plate plate nahi I think if one of those round
do we need
uh-huh.
the there's some over here about this one
In the meantime, Kashika started taking the bati out of the oven, first with her bare hands, and then with a towel and hot pads. She instructed a few of her helpers to quickly crack each of the hot bati roll and then drop them into a large bowl and saturate them with ghee. They covered the bowl of bati while the rest of the meal cooked.
And we want to make sure that they are covered, otherwise they become hard.
I've never seen a
loose cut. Pakar ji?
So we call this bati. You will also hear the name litti. This one is just plain, simple bati. You can make stuffed bati as well.
Okay.
If somebody can break it, like you know,
crush. Yeah.
Crush, not too much. So.
One by one?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's hot. Garam hai. And you can take the stock. So what we want to do is we want to put like ghee in it here.
Mm-hmm. Can you just like break one and show us that?
No, you can. Oh, it will go in the bati. So yeah, I'll show one. Let me check on the rice first. Yes. Okay. So. I think I'll show. Mm. Yes. So we want to do it fairly soon. So
okay.
So it has to be like this. I'll put it here. So this, and then.
Yes. Like this.
Wonderful. But if you, yeah.
You know, cooking seems such a fun thing when everybody's enjoying it, and. I've enjoyed doing this series here, and the enthusiasm, the love you all share, and there's something about cooking, you know, there's a joy when you cook, and even more joy when people eat, you know, and then they say, oh, it's so good, and, you know, it's so yummy, and then there's a silence, and then everybody's eating, you know, that is, you know, so thank you all for taking the time and come and do this as a community, and I hope that you know we can all continue doing this because the idea of doing this. So I've always loved to integrate the cooking as a part of my curriculum in language teaching because there is culture is the soul of language, mm-hmm. you know. And if we don't include that, we are missing such a big part. So, careful. So, you can see the rice. So, it has to kind of separate, you know, I mean, it has the So ghee or oil does that, you know. So when it's kind of coated with the ghee or oil, you know, or butter, it cooks better and tastes better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, you're good. So that seems like a good thing, though, having a live nerve in there.
Yeah.
Feel like pain. My grandma does not feel pain in her hands anymore. Yeah. And like the boiling water that she washes dishes with, I'm like, grandma, this is like...
The chaotic, steamy kitchen was bringing up memories of home for some of the students that day.
At various moments throughout the cooking process, I'd overhear students talking about their mothers or grandmothers.
Like, this is like how I want my life. Okay. So, see what is happening to the...
That is such a delightful boil.
So, this is boiling, right? Mm. So, there are so many ways of describing one's anger. So, when this is the verb in Hindi and Urdu is... Ubalna. So, ubalna means to boil. And when you say somebody, why are you, like, aap kyun ubal rahe hain? Aag babula. Aap itna aag babula kyun ho rahe hain? You know, so you can see, like, so angry. So we have, you know, expressions like that.
Maybe delightful.
Yes. But, no, actually, that's a beautiful way.
It looks like it's having so much fun in there.
Yes, 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 yeah. So it has to boil.
It's a giggling boil.
Hi, isme dal dijiye. Thank you so much. So we will let it boil and until our rice is done. Yes.
You're listening to Earth Eats, and we're in the kitchen at the IU Food Institute, cooking with Kashika Singh. After a short break, we'll talk more with Kashika about what inspired her to do these cooking sessions on campus. Stay tuned.
Can I just try this for you?
Earth Eats, this is Kate Young. We're back with Kashika Singh. We're talking about the cooking sessions she's been doing at the IU Food Institute. Once a month on a Friday, she's been teaching her Hindi-Urdu language students, and others, how to prepare home-style Indian food. I wanted to hear more from her about why she wanted to offer these workshops and what they mean to her.
Food connects to... For me personally, it's something that I connect with in ways that are hard to describe at times, perhaps because I've been away from my family, from India, and America has become my home. But when a place becomes your home, I think we still keep the things that mean a lot, you know, and I think food is one of the ways, you know, it's beautiful memories, nostalgia. So I think it's personal for me, but I also see the positive effects and impacts that it has made on my students. I'm personally very happy that I've been able to do this because the inception, the idea came to support students' mental health. I saw that decline in my classroom. And being a mother, I saw that at home, my daughter in middle school entirely did online. It affected the mental health so much. And then I saw it in my students. So I thought something like this needs to be done where it's different, you know, and they also feel a sense that they are cared, they're looked after, you know, yeah.
How were you noticing the mental health issues with your students? What brought it to your attention?
Many ways. So they'll miss the class, or if they'll be in class, they will be very exhausted, very passive, and not very engaged. And missing class was the biggest one. And we have a attendance policy in our classroom because being present is very important in language classroom. And so it affected in other ways. It started to affect my classroom enrollment, actually. Every class has a attendance policy that is aligned with the credit hours, so 5, 4, and 3. And after missing that many classes, student failed the course. And that was another big reason for the decline in mental health, because these students were struggling. They wanted to continue in the classroom, but they were unable to do that because they had missed. So some students took it like they took it as a personal failure. And I saw that, and as a teacher, as a language instructor, that was very uncomfortable for me. So I was just trying to experiment with ways to facilitate that.
So to facilitate a connection with some students who were maybe feeling disconnected.
And there are so many reasons that they can feel like that. And I really appreciate the initiative that IU is taking for mental health and providing all the resources. And I think we all can do our part. Mm-hmm. And I was doing my part. Yeah. And students have loved it. Yeah.
So how do you think bringing people together to cook together and eat together helps facilitate mental health or helps with mental health?
Yeah, that's a difficult question to answer, because I wish I would know how. But every time when somebody came, you know, a student or a member from campus faculty, there's a joy in cooking, but there is a greater joy in seeing when a person eats your food and then they appreciate it, you know, the joy that, you know, that was very, I can see that, you know, like when students or anybody who's a part of those cooking sessions and they leave saying that they'll come back, they say that, you know, this was one of the highlights of their week. They just felt that they were at home and that's all what they wanted. And when they say, I wish we could do this more, or like as simple as, oh, it's such a nice way to end the Friday after a stressful week. So I think that means a lot to me. You know, I mean, I wish I could take away all their stresses and, you know, create that. But they're in college. They're doing a lot of other works. And stress is a part of our everyday life now. I've said this many times, and I really believe that there are many, many ways we can express our love. And one of the ways to express the love is through food. In India, that's what we believe. You know, there are so many ways we express our care or love, you know. And I mean in a more general way, like, you know, your mom making your favorite dish, or even if it is a simple dish, there's some magic in the ways, you know, mothers cook, you know. Or I grew up enjoying meals that were cooked with scratch, you know, and my mom was always, you know, we were not, like, we did not grow up having the option of what would you like to have, you know. We just ate what was cooked, you know, and we really enjoyed that, you know, and it was a very simple meal, but we enjoyed that.
You said earlier, I'm not sure exactly the word you used, but you talked about it being a joy to cook for people and to have people enjoying your food. But it also, you know, hosting a large group of people for food and them watching you cook, that can also be stressful and a lot of work. And, you know, you're on, it's, you know, it's kind of like teaching. And but it seemed like you were getting energy from it. And I don't know if I don't want to interpret how you feel, but is it sort of a mix of being stressful and exhausting, but then also feeding you in some way?
I'll be honest, it is exhausting, like the whole cooking, but that is not the thing I feel, you know. I think I feel very enthusiastic, very energized, you know, and I feel like, oh my God, you know, the way it affects my students, the way it affects everybody who is involved, you know, I think that energizes me. Mm-hmm. And I also feel that this is not a class, but this is a window to a culture. Mm-hmm. And without these students traveling to India, they are getting a lot. To be able to share that, it's the experience. Yeah. And just the joy that I see on their faces after, you know, having the meal and packing a little to-go box when they go. and then they say, oh, we'll come next week, next time again, you know, next month. And then also they will report me. They'll say, oh, you know, I cooked this and it turned out so well, you know. So I think they are not there only to have a dinner or a meal, but some students who come, they also practice, you know. They are making it. And so that is one very happy, positive feeling that I connect with. Like when I'm cooking and preparing the vegetable, that is one of my most relaxed, and it's therapeutic to me. Even just chopping the vegetables and putting in the plate in an organized way, it's a whole process for me. And I think it's a process when we cook and how it is washed, how it is chopped, how fine, you know, is it, you know, everything, you know. So while I do that, it's like for this, everybody has their own thing, you know. And for me, I think it's cooking. Mm-hmm. Probably during pandemic, I also picked on gardening. Mm-hmm. So
something that I observed coming to the cooking session was that, like you said, it was an experience, you know, it was a very experiential on all the senses. You know, it's a crowded kitchen, it got really hot, and all these sounds and all these aromas and people talking, and it just felt like a real, I can't even really explain it, but I felt like just sort of enveloped in all of these sensory experiences. And I also observed that a lot of the students, you know, there was a real diverse crowd of students who were there, and not just students, there were other people who had attended from community or campus. And some of the students who were not from the United States, or maybe have grown up in the U.S., but maybe in an immigrant household, were talking about, oh, this is like my mom. You can't believe what my mom does. You know, I could hear them telling different stories about their mothers in the kitchen. And I just thought that was really nice. You could tell that they were really getting that sensation, and they were connecting with each other over those shared experiences from their households.
Yes. Yeah. No, thank you. That's the exact observation I have experienced, that, you know, we just are talking about a community, about diversity, about being comfortable, being loved, and sharing that love. It might sound like, oh my God, how you can do that with food? But I can see that. And international students, you know, they miss their home. And the recipes, they're very simple everyday food. But with time and space, even the simple things become so lavish, a luxury or a special. Like, you know, the one of the first dish that I prepared was khichdi. And khichdi is like, you can add whatever you want, you know, if you are not in a mood of making a big meal, that's what you make, you know, or if you are not feeling well, upset stomach, or you are trying to detox, so many reasons. But some of the international students who came and they said, oh, you know, I came because I'm missing khichdi. So
what is khichdi?
Khichdi, it's basically a dish with lentils and green mung beans, split green mung beans. And there are varieties. You can add green, split green mung beans. And sometimes people will add other lentils also, tuwar or arhar, we call it. Any vegetable you want to add, potato, carrots, tomato, anything that you have in the fridge you want to add. You can make a lighter version on your stomach, you know, just a little bit of salt and turmeric, or you can make a masala khichdi, you know. And You can have it with ghee. You can have it sesame oil. You know, I mean, it's a preference, you know.
But it's a real basic traditional dish that a lot of people would know.
Yeah.
I remember a few years ago seeing the kitchen at the IU Food Institute. It's just a small kitchen in a little house. And I remember thinking, oh, well, that's nice that they have an oven and so forth, but they won't really be able to do cooking demos because it's just not that kind of kitchen. It's just not really set up. But then seeing you do the cooking, I realized what a perfect kitchen it was, especially for the kind of cooking that you were doing, because it wasn't a show. It was a participation, and it was how crowded it got and chaotic was kind of part of the experience, and it was okay.
It's such a busy space, and as you said, that it's so much is happening there. You know, it's like India. It's like a mini India. Like, you know, in India, when you go to street, it's so busy. Cars and people and vendors and dogs and cows, everything you can see on the street. So a very lively, busy scene you can see. And here in the kitchen, it's like everybody is doing their thing. You know, a group of students is talking, helping, chopping the vegetables, stirring, you know. We learn also how to navigate in that kind of atmosphere. So it's community building, and I mean, one thing aligns with another thing, you know, like it's always like, oh, I'm doing everything. And then if I am doing everything, becomes we are doing together everything. It just becomes so nice. Yeah.
I used to teach cooking classes at a food pantry here in Bloomington. And, you know, it was about teaching simple meals you can make with whole foods and showing people how they could cook with these vegetables and whole grains and different things. And there was some point when we realized that the cooking classes, they weren't as much about learning to cook as they were about gathering together in the kitchen to do something together. And I just really got that feeling from your session.
Yeah, thank you for noticing that and saying that, because that is what I had hoped that this would do. Food is... Yes, it is having a meal together, but it's also a glimpse of a culture. Yeah, it's a glimpse of a culture. Yeah, I think how beautiful it is that we can enjoy a meal together without knowing that person. I really want to emphasize that diversity. This campus talks about a lot of diversity and does so many diversity events. We can embrace diversity in a very simple way as cooking, you know, because everybody comes there, you know, we are talking, I don't know who these students are, you know, and it's a safe place for everybody to come and practice and learn. And then one student would come and the next time brings four more, you know. So I think, you know, it's a very simple way of including, you know, very easy. I think it's very easy to do this. One idea could connect with so many students, so many people. And I think there's something with the food that which you have grown with, you know. It could be a very simple thing, you know. For me, it's like even the sound that is in the kitchen when I'm frying the onion, or the aroma, or even the spices when they are blending. And there has to be a point where the oil has to be on the top of the spices, and then you know that it's cooked now, you know, or when to add the tomato and the chili powder, you know, like those little things matter a lot, you know. Everybody would say, oh, this reminded me of home. You know, I think that was very special. And I think to have that in a college campus, I think that was very important.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That was Kashika Singh, senior Hindi Urdu lecturer in the Dar India Studies program at Indiana University. Her cooking sessions took place at the IU Food Institute on Park Street. Sadly, the IU Food Institute is closing its doors, but their website is still active. Hopefully, In the Kitchen with Kashika will continue in another venue, so check the Food Institute's website in the fall. We have links to all of it, plus photos of Kashika cooking, on our website, eartheats.org. Earth Eats team includes Violet Barron, Aya Bonbinder, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Toby Foster, Abraham Hill, Daniela Richardson, Samantha Schemenauer, Peyton Whaley, and Harvest Public Media. The show is produced and edited by me, Kate Young. Special thanks this week to Kashika Singh and everyone at the IU Food Institute. Our theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Additional music on the show comes to us from Universal Production Music. Our executive producer is John Bailey.